In our first presentation on bond pricing and yields, we discussed and calculated the different types of yields and the taxable equivalent yields. Well, in this presentation, we're going to take a look at the yield spreads and then take a look in depth at bond valuation. And something is going to look very similar to what we've done before. Okay, let's start on slide number 20, yield spreads. The spreads refer to the differences in interest rates that exist among various sectors of the bond market. In general, the shorter the maturity, the lower the rate. The longer the maturity, the higher the rate. Now, this makes perfect sense when you think about it, just from a standpoint of somebody lending out their money. The longer you lend out the money, the more risk is involved that you won't get it back, so you want to be paid more. And we'll discuss these in detail more. The higher the rating of the bond, the lower the interest rate. Again, it just makes perfect sense from the standpoint of somebody lending money that if you're going to lend it to somebody who you are absolutely sure is going to pay you back, you will not require as high an interest rate as if you're going to lend it to somebody who may not pay you back. So in general, treasuries carry the lowest rates because the United States government, I don't care what anybody says, will pay its debts, won't it? Politics may keep it from paying its debt, but economically, we know we will pay our debts economically. Politically, that's a different issue when you have Yahoo. Well, let's not go there. Municipal bonds are next. Why? Because state and local governments are, for the most part, pretty stable. There are notable exceptions. General obligation bonds typically are less risky than revenue bonds. Why? Because the general obligation bonds have to be, you know, they have to be paid. They are based on the full faith and credit of the state of California or the city of Chula Vista or Southwestern Community College, whereas the revenue bonds are based upon some water project or bridge authority or whatever. And again, they almost always pay their debts. And then, of course, corporates yield the highest rates. Why? Because corporations are not guaranteed by the full faith and credit of a sovereign entity which can tax their citizens. And then non-callable are more desirable than callable, so they'll have lower interest rates, and callable will have the higher interest rates. Okay, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Here is a couple of charts that I pulled down from Yahoo on the 28th of March, 2014, and you see the spreads amongst treasuries and amongst corporate bonds. And we find that lower shorter maturity, are just paying absolutely nothing, 0.02%. And then you get up to 2 year and 3 year, it's still pretty darn bad, and 5 year, the 10 year, which is often quoted in the media, 2.7%. That's still very low. It was lower a couple, 2012, 2013. And 30-year bonds are paying 3.54%. That's so hard to believe. Somebody would lock their money away for 30 years at 3.5%. Maybe you're going to beat inflation by a few pennies. And the same thing is true for corporate bonds. I mean, they're paying almost as bad as treasuries. I mean, the 20-year, 4% for AAA, 4.6%. So the yields are very tight, as we will say. So let's take a look at slide number 22. Yes, often investors will speak about the bond spreads as being tight or wide. A tight spread means that interest rates among the bonds they are evaluating are very close to one another. For example, Treasury paying 4.8%, corporate bond paying 5.1%. Whereas a wide spread means there's a big difference between the bond interest rates that they are comparing. and our example of a treasury paying 3.2, but the corporate bonds are paying 8.2. It's a huge spread. For several yields, bond yield spreads were very tight. And then the 2008-2009 turmoil came along, and the yield spreads widened to levels not seen since the Great Depression. People bid up the prices of treasury bonds, and the yields went shockingly low, and they bid down the prices of corporate bonds because they felt most corporations were all going to disappear, and the yields went sky high, and that's what you'll see in that little presentation on Ford, where Ford's prices plummeted and the yields went high. And then what's happened? Right, they have narrowed significantly over the past few years. And as we saw on the previous slide, they're very tight now. You're going to hear the term basis point. Well, it's just a silly way of saying a hundredth of a percent. That's all it is, a basis point. A full percent would be 100 basis points. So I think it's a silly term, but you're going to hear it and you have to know what it means, a hundredth of a percent. And as we saw on the previous slide, there is not much of a spread between the 5-year corporate and the 5-year treasury. They're very, very tight. Yeah. Okay, slide number 23. This graph is from your book on interest rates versus inflation. And we see that as inflation goes up, right, interest rates go up. So we see inflation going up. Where's my little cursor? Here it is. There it is. Inflation going up. That's the red line. In the late 70s and into early 81, and interest rates following. And then the Federal Reserve Bank broke the back of inflation by causing a severe recession, raising short-term interest rates, and then inflation fell dramatically. And as we see over the 1980s, 1990s, into 2000s, the bond yields falling dramatically. And sure enough, after after the turmoil of 2008 and 2009, inflation essentially went negative. Yeah. Why? Housing prices fell, wages fell, yeah. I know the price of milk still went up and gas, but actually gas fell dramatically in 2008 and 2009, and then it's come back up again. So what happens when inflation goes up? Bond rates go up, because inflation is an in bond investor's worst nightmare. Except for default, that's even worse. Slide number 24, the yield curve. The yield curve is a graph that represents the relationship between a bond's maturity and its yield at a given point in time. And it is also used to make comparisons among types of bonds. Normally, as we'll see currently, the yield curve is upward sloping, and longer-term bonds have higher interest rates than shorter-term bonds and treasury bills and corporate paper. However, sometimes the yield curve is downward sloping. It's called an inverted yield curve. And shorter-term bonds and treasury bills and the like have higher interest rates than longer-term bonds. Hang on a minute. Relax. Let's first take a look at slide 25 and see the two different curves. This, number one, is the upward sloping curve. This is more normal. This is what we normally see. Shorter-term interest rates are lower than longer-term interest rates. Shorter-term securities that mature in the short term will have lower interest rates, will yield less than longer-term mature securities. However, sometimes, as we said, there's a downward sloping curve. When do we have that? Hang on a minute. Slide number 26. This is the curve as of the 28th of March. I know it says 29th, but that's when I grabbed it, but they don't trade on Saturdays. You see that the shorter-term maturities are basically zero. It's not usual. They usually pay at least 1 or 2 or 3%, but not now. And we see that there's an upward sloping curve. longer-term maturities pay higher interest rates. No, not much higher, the spreads being very low, but they still are upward sloping. So, let's continue. We've already discussed this a little bit. Why do longer-term securities normally have higher interest rates than shorter-term securities? Well, there are various hypotheses, but it just makes perfect sense, as we've already discussed. The longer the money is out there, the more chance for things to go wrong. Exactly. So let's take a look at the different hypotheses that the economists posit, they offer to us. The expectations hypothesis. The shape of the yield curve reflects investors' expectations of future interest rates. We'll come back to this one because this is very interesting. No pun intended. Maturity preference, liquidity preference. Now this is the one that makes perfect sense. Investors tend to prefer the liquidity of short-term securities because they know they're going to get their money back sooner, and therefore they require a premium to invest in longer-term securities. Okay, I can buy that. And then slide 28, the market segmentation hypothesis. The market for debt is segmented on the basis of maturity, and there's a supply and demand relationship within each segment that determines the prevailing interest rate. In other words, there are people who want to lend for the short term, and there are people who want to borrow for the short term. And then there are people who want to lend for the intermediate term and borrow for the long term. And so there are various markets and supplies and demands within those markets. And that makes sense too. Each of these theories makes sense and each has some merit. But how do we account for the times when a yield curve is inverted? That doesn't make sense. That flies in the face of certainly the second one, the liquidity preference. What factors could cause an inverted yield curve to occur, and what can the yield curve tell us about the future of the economy? So slide 29. The yield curve and the economy, dear students. Very important piece of information that you should be aware of, not that it's going to change the way you invest. It may, depending on your long-term or short-term time horizon. But since World War II, right, 70 years, every time the yield curve has inverted, short-term rates were higher than long-term rates, the economy has fallen into a recession. Now, there was an exception. In 1966, the yield curve was inverted and the economy just hit zero. It didn't go negative. It's a bit like a plane. It almost touched down, but then went back up again. The yield curve is currently mostly upward, as we saw a few slides ago. But for about 2 years, this is unusual that it lasted this long, before the beginning of 2008, before the financial turmoil, the yield curve had been inverted. Now, ever so slightly, shorter-term interest rates were just a bit higher than longer-term interest rates. And so, in 2006 and 2007, the bond market had been predicting a recession for over 2 years. And the stock market, for the most part, just didn't believe them. And it wasn't until the fall of 2008, when the wheels fell off, that the officials charged with tracking the economy acknowledged, oh yeah, by the way, we're in a recession. We're going backwards. It took over 2 years, but the bond ghouls were finally proven right. Now, what are we talking about here? Why would bond investors be so happy? That's why they're called bond ghouls, when the economy falls into recession. Why? Because when the economy falls into recession, what happens to interest rates? Exactly, they fall. And interest rates fall, what happens to bond prices? Bond prices rise. Hence, bond investors, especially aggressive bond investors who are trying to make money off of the appreciation of bonds, love it when the economy falls into recession. Never mind that people are losing their jobs and It's not a very fun time. They're happy as clams, and whatever that term, phrase means. They're happy. They're jumping up and down because interest rates fall, bond prices rise. That's why they're called the bond ghouls. And I think I told you this already. The bond market is a whole lot bigger than the stock market, folks. And even though the stock market gets all the press and gets all the glamour and all the attention, the bond market is... it's the backbone of the economy. And when the bond ghouls are howling and that the economy is going into recession, they're looking forward to lower interest rates and hence capital appreciation on their bonds. Mm-hmm. So watch for the inverted yield curve. Slide number 30. Okay, let's turn our attention to bond pricing. Now, as I said, I mentioned this is going to look kind of familiar, folks. Bonds are normally priced according to the present value of their future cash flows. Uh-oh. You were hoping we wouldn't have to deal with present value anymore, weren't you? Wrong. Semi-annual interest payments. Remember, we get paid twice a year with most all bonds. Some bonds pay monthly or quarterly, but most all bonds pay every 6 months in the United States. And then you will receive your principal. Most of the time, most bonds pay back the principal. Although other factors will always need to be considered, such as the creditworthiness of the issuer, because if an issuer runs into trouble, the price of their outstanding bonds will fall. Why? Because investors will be afraid of default and will be dumping the bonds. Go back, and if you haven't done it, go back and take a look at what happened to those Ford bonds during the Great Recession. Uh-huh, exactly. So, slide number 31. The bond price equals the present value of the interest income plus the present value of the repayment of the principal. Does this look familiar? Exactly. This is the discounted cash flow model. Except in the case of stocks, we were looking at the present value of the income stream from dividends and then the expected price of the stock when we chose to sell or thinking of selling, you know, 3-4 years from now. In the bond world, we're looking at the present value of the interest income, which we know is very stable, assuming the bond doesn't default, and we know we're going to get, almost always, our principal back, our $1,000 back. So we're going to find out that these are far more reliable predictions. Bonds are boring. So we'll do the calculations with annual compounding of the interest payments, but we really should do semi-annually. But it's a pain in the neck, right? And annual compounding will give you very similar answer within a couple of dollars. Of course, that's why we have computers. That's why we have spreadsheets. The spreadsheet can do the semi-annual compounding just like that. So you just type in the numbers and bingo. You don't have to worry about semi-annual compounding. But as we'll see, it's a couple of bucks difference. So slide number 32. Here's an example. ExxonMobil. You've heard of them, right? And I chose this example because we have these tables that are only on the whole number interest and the whole number years. And that's why I chose it. I looked for a bond that had a... yield to maturity very close to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9%, and that was very close to 8, 9, 10 years. And so I found this ExxonMobil bond that has a coupon rate, a nominal yield of 3.176%. That's $31.76 every year, actually half of that every 6 months, but let's just leave it at annual. And they have a 10-year maturity. It's due in March of 2024. And it's priced to yield almost 3%, a little bit more, 3.005%. The current yield, which we learned how to compute in the previous chapter, is 3.13% because we have to pay a little bit more than the $1,000. The quoted price on March 28th was $1,014.60. So it was selling at a premium, which knocks down our current yield and certainly knocks down our yield to maturity. Now, if you go back and use the yield to maturity formula in the previous chapter, you're going to find it's not exactly the same. Why? Because that's an approximation. This is using the compounding that we talked about, and we use a spreadsheet. It makes it a whole lot easier. But for we mortals who don't have a spreadsheet, you go to the present value tables. Oh, them again, yeah. And what you'll find is in Chapter 10, we have two tables. Why? Well, the first table is the same table. It's smaller because it had to fit on one. You had to get two tables to fit on one page. But the first table is the exact same table you saw in Chapter 6. It's the present value of a single payment. But we add this other table just to make life easier, because in the case of the stocks, we only looked out 3-4 years at the most. 5 years is pretty, pretty ridiculous, but you can do it. But 2, 3, 4 years is good for looking out for stocks. But in bonds, we look out 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. So if we're going to do a single payment every year for 10 payments, and then that's the interest payment, and then do the last calculation, the principal repayment, that means we got to do 10 calculations for a 10-year bond, 20 calculations for a 20-year bond. So what do? We use the table on the right. So if you haven't printed it out or have it on your screen, go pause the presentation and go get it. It's the present value table from Chapter 10 in the class website. And you'll see that the table on the right is a present value table for a stream of payments, a series of income payments. And that's exactly what a bond is. We're going to get $31.76 every year for the next 10 years from our interest payments. It's not going to change. It's not dividends, right? These are mandatory payments. It's not a stock. It's a bond. A stock can pay dividends. They can raise their dividends. They can cut their dividends. They could stop paying them altogether. But a bond can't. A bond must pay the same amount every year until maturity. So we're going to get $31.76, assuming ExxonMobil doesn't go bankrupt, which I don't think is going to happen. It's rated AAA. Higher than the federal government. And so we go across to 3% and down to 10 years on the table on the right, and what you'll see is a present value factor of 8.530. Do you see that? Make sure you do, because this is how you do these things. And it's going to be on the exam, and it's on the assignments, and there's a worksheet, and there's a commentary, and there's answer keys, and I'll be happy to help you. Don't blow it off. So you take $31.76 times the 8.53, and you get $270.91, somewhere close to that. So what is that telling us? That's telling us that the $31.76 that we're going to get each year for the next 10 years today at 3% is worth $270.91 and a little bit more, right? Almost $271. That's what the stream of income is worth to us today, the present value of the current, of the interest payments that we're going to get for the next 10 years. Then we need to add in the fact that we're going to get paid $1,000 back, the repayment of the principal, in 10 years. Well, that's a single payment, so we go back to the table on the left, the table we used in Chapter 6. Yeah, that should look familiar. Go across the 3% down, of course, it's a lot less percentage, isn't it, than stocks. Go across the 3% down 10 years, and you see the present value multiplier for a single payment as 0.744. Well, that's easy. Some of you can do that in your head. 1,000 times 0.744, that's $744. So the $1,000 we're going to get 10 years from now, today, if we're happy with 3%, which I'm not, but if we're happy with 3%, it's worth to us $744. You add the $270.91 of interest payments, the present value, to the present value of the principal repayment, 7.44, and you find that this bond should be worth to us today $1,014.91. And sure enough, the quoted price was $1,014.60. Pretty darn close. The bond calculator on the class website gives us $1,014.54 for annual payments, and the more precise, using the semi-annual payments, because we're really going to get $31.76, half of that, twice each year, the semi-annual spreadsheet calculations gives us $1,016.25, which I said, a couple bucks difference. And so the price is actually in the little lower on the end, the lower end of our calculations, right? Why? Well, it's AAA rated. It's Exxon. Yeah, exactly. They get a premium for being having a higher credit rating than the United States government. Since investors know exactly what they will get in the future from bonds, assuming no default, the predictions for bond valuations tend to be very precise. This ain't the way stocks are, folks. Do you understand? Do you understand now? I think I've told you this. I like to think of stocks like baseball, and bonds like football, right? And you might think, what are you talking about? Baseball is played on a field where it's a diamond, right? It's open ended. There's no limit. Obviously, there's a limit. You can't hit a baseball around the world. Some people think of that, right? But the lines go on forever. The foul lines go on forever, and it's open ended. Whereas football is, it's a little rectangle, and you can't go outside the rectangle. I don't know if that helps. Stocks are more open ended than bonds. Bonds are very precise. Yes, it can be told, bonds are boring. So make sure you can do this. And of course, there's a worksheet, there's a commentary, an answer key, and then there are assignments, which, hint, 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 will look very similar to the questions on the exam. Slide 33. So make sure you can do those. Slide 33. Let's continue. Reinvestment risk. What's this? Well, this is the uncertainty about the future value of an investor's bond investments that result from the need to reinvest bond interest payments and redemptions at yields not known in advance. Well, remember, you're going to be getting interest payments. Unless you're using those interest payments to live off of, you're using the interest payments as income for housing or food or whatever, you're going to be reinvesting those interest payments. And interest rates are changing. So you don't know if interest rates are going to go up or down, and you don't know what's going to happen to the repayments that you get, the interest income and the bond repayments. So changing interest rates don't only affect the price of your bonds, they also affect your future income, as you need to reinvest the interest income and bond repayments of the principal. If interest rates have fallen, your income level will fall as well, because you need to reinvest your income and bond repayments now at lower interest rates. But if interest rates have risen, your income level will rise because you reinvest the money back into higher earning bonds. And this is why some people get very, very worried about high rising interest rates for bonds. Yes, it is true, your bond prices will fall, your mutual fund will fall in the short term as interest rates start rising. But remember, the income that you're getting from these bonds will now be reinvested back into bonds that are paying higher interest rates. So as long as you extend your time horizon, rising interest rates are not the Armageddon, the disaster that some people think of them. Now, for people who have a very short-term time horizon, they see their bond mutual fund or their bond value of their bonds fall, they tend to panic and say, I gotta get out! Well, no, this is, if you have a long-term time horizon, you just have to sit tight and realize that this is another cycle, and you will live through it. But that's the difference if you're an investor or if you're a speculator, a trader. Slide number 34, duration. This gets a little, and you'll learn all how to calculate this and everything. We're not going to do it in this class, so don't worry. Measure of a bond price's sensitivity to changes in interest rates and bond yields. It captures both the price and the reinvestment risk. It's used to indicate how a bond will react in different interest rate environments. The duration of a bond changes as it approaches its maturity date and current interest rates changes. So it's in motion. It moves as we get closer to the maturity date and as interest rates change. In general, the longer a bond's maturity, the longer its duration, hence the term duration, and the higher a bond's nominal rate and yield to maturity, the shorter its duration. The shorter the duration, theoretically, the less potential price volatility, and vice versa. The longer the duration, which makes sense, the more susceptible it will be to price volatility up and down. Slide number 35. This is where it starts to get a little silly, immunization, right? Duration and immunization. Investors who have a specified time horizon can use bond immunization, not a virus, folks, to increase the probability of successfully achieving their desired goal. The idea is you keep your average duration of your bond investments equal to your time horizon. You have a 5-year time horizon, you keep your duration of your bonds around 5 years. You have a 10-year duration, you have a 20-year duration, you would be more protected against interest rate-induced price swings, but it requires constant rebalancing of your bond portfolio. Since the durations of bonds change as interest rates change and bonds get closer to maturity, so are most individual investors going to do this? No, they buy a bond and they clip the coupon and then they get their money back and they buy another bond. It's more used for people who have big portfolios, not for we individual investors. Pension fund managers, bond mutual fund managers. The bond mutual fund manager has an intermediate term bond fund with a time frame of 3 to 5 years. Well, then, yeah, he's also, he or she has millions or billions of dollars in the bond fund, so it makes sense for them to be buying and selling bonds. They're doing it anyway because as bonds are maturing all the time, they're buying new ones. So this is not something, you should know it exists, this idea of duration and trying to keep your bonds duration at the same time frame as your time horizon, as your investment objectives, but it's not something that we investors are going to do. Most, unless, if you have $12 million out there, contact me. I'll be sure to help you. Slide number 36. Bond investment strategies. That was a bit of a joke. I hope you understand. Okay, income strategies. I don't know that many Southwestern Community College students have $12 million to invest, or $120 million, or whatever. Income strategy, slide 36. Capital gain strategy, total return strategies. Well, these are the different investment strategies for bonds. And certainly the easiest to implement is an income strategy. You purchase the bonds because you want the interest income that they produce. The hardest would be capital gain strategy. You're speculating that interest rates will fall, and as we said, there are people who are paid tremendous sums of money to incorrectly predict where interest rates will go. And then the combination of the two is called a total return strategy. You purchase bonds for both the income and for the possibilities of capital gains. And sometimes you'll see a bond fund called a total return fund or an income strategy income fund. You know, when it says income fund, you know it's for income. But the capital gains ones will have names like aggressive opportunities or something. opportunity bond where they're trying to make money as interest rates fall. Very difficult to do, folks. I don't recommend it. But then again, I'm more of a buy and hold. I'm just happy to score little singles there to get 3 yards and whatever sports analogy you want to use, but for the people who want to hit a home run and throw the Hail Mary pass or whatever sports analogy you want to use, all I can wish them is good luck. Slide number 37, bond laddering. Again, another strategy which is useful for people who've got a lot of money. And this is a strategy of purchasing bonds with staggering maturities. You purchase some bonds with short-term maturities, some with intermediate-term, and some with long-term maturities. Again, it's a very popular strategy with pension funds and bond mutual managers, mutual fund managers, because they have considerable sums of money to invest. What are the disadvantages? What are the advantages? Well, the advantage is that you're diversified. Exactly. Like, you know, buying some large-cap stocks, some mid-cap stocks, and some small-cap stocks. Same idea. You're buying some long-term bonds, which are more volatile because they're more susceptible to interest rate swings. You're buying some intermediate-term bonds, which are less susceptible. And then you're buying some short-term bonds, which start to act like treasury bills or money market accounts. When is it a good time to ladder? For most people, if they have a long-term time frame, I think it's always a pretty good time because you're diversified. When is it not a good time? Well, if you think, exactly, if you think interest rates are going to fall precipitously, then why would you want to be in short-term maturities? Even intermediate-term, you'd want to be in longer-term maturities, but that doesn't mean interest rates will fall. Exactly. Exactly. So bond laddering is just another method to diversify your bond portfolio. And on slide 38, we see the current ladder, so to speak. As of March 28th, these are the this was a bit of a review. We took a look at the two tables several slides back. The 3-year, the 3-month treasury, the 6-month treasury are paying nothing. So if you need the money in 3 months or 6 months, you're going to get nothing, but that's the current environment we live in. 2-year, look at that. The 2-year treasury is paying 0.45%. And the 2-year corporate A bonds are paying 7.77%. So it's a very, very tight spread. And I don't know if you go back, you'll see the AAA bonds were paying 0.55. I mean, it's almost nothing. I'll stop complaining. 5-year treasury, 1.73%. 5-year corporate A, 2.28%. A very tight spread. Less than or about 50 basis points, about 0.5%. Exactly. Oh, there's the phone. I'm going to pause. Okay, where were we? Yes, we were talking about the tight spreads. 10-year corp treasury to, 5-year, we're looking at 5-year treasury, 5-year corporated. That's not quite 50 basis points, yes, 0.5%. And then 10-year treasury, 10-year corporate A, about 100 basis points, about 1%. And then the 20-year corporate, 4 points, not good. That's not too bad, but that's still not very good. If I'm going to invest in a, personally, this is just me speaking, if I'm going to invest in a 20-year corporate bond rated A, I want at least 5.5-6%, folks. So that's not too bad, but look at this, 3.5%. You're going to lock in your money for 30 years, and you're going to get barely more than what inflation has returned, has given us over the last 34 years. So, no thank you. That's not for me. Now, there are other people who are saying, but don't put your money in the stock market because the stock market's going to be worthless. You know, they may be right, but I don't know if, I think I've told you this. It's all a matter of degree. If you have your money in for the long term, and stocks really do return horribly over the next 20, 30 years, that means the economy has literally fallen off a cliff. We are in very serious trouble. And the truth is, folks, the harsh reality is that bonds aren't going to help you. In the short term, they will, because they'll hold up a whole lot better than stocks. But if the economy falls apart and the stock market falls apart, then eventually the bond market will follow. It has to, because if the companies are in that bad a shape, they will one by one, or maybe more than one by one, start to default on their bonds. And the tax revenues that are used to support the municipal and eventually the treasury bonds will start to one by one, maybe more than one by one at a time, will start to default. And we'll all be digging for beetle grubs and boiling bark for dinner. So you gotta believe that failure is not an option. Yes, the stock market is far more risky than the bond market in the short term, but things have got to stay relatively intact. Unless we find some system that's better than capitalism, I don't know that we will anytime soon, but if we do, okay, you know, we'll take a look at it. Until then, this is the system we have to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves, and internet access, of course. Okay, enough said. Slide number 39, and that, dear students, is our discussion of bond prices and bond yields. And what we'll take a look at next are preferred stocks and convertible securities, hybrid securities, as they're called. And really, I labeled it Chapter 18, but this is a little piece of Chapter 18, so I don't, really shouldn't give it a chapter designation. And what we're going to find is that these things, as we discussed a long time ago in Chapter 1, have the advantages of stocks and bonds and the disadvantages of stocks and bonds. And it turns out that they're really a small universe, small part of the investing universe. So for most of us, they're not that exciting. And then in Chapter 11, we attempt to wrap it all together. We attempt to tie everything together and discuss asset allocation. So see you in our next presentation with preferred stocks and convertible securities. Now go back and do the worksheets. And if you get stuck, contact me. I am more than happy to help you. You know that. See ya.